Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios.
The man your man could smell.
Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking.
But are you a different animal and the same beast?
Streaming live on YouTube.
You're going to break up with me because of what I do on the radio?
Here's Theo Dorsey.
No Theo Dorsey, so we get a packed program today. It's Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo filling in. We still got Christian Katt. He is up, down south, I should say, in West Palm Beach. I am up north. It is Theoretically Speaking. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter / X at ESPN West Palm, ESPN South Florida app. Going to be a fun one today because there's a whole lot to talk about post Week 17, technically. I know we still got Rams-Falcons, for those who care, tonight on ESPN. And we also have Week 18. The schedule is set. We know when teams are playing. And you got a couple playoff-implicating matchups that we will get into and a couple big matchups to react to from yesterday. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday season, enjoyed time with family, friends, whatever you did for the holiday season, gift-giving. If you're not the gift-giving type, Christmas caroling, you know, Hanukkah, whatever it might have been, hope everybody had a fantastic time over the holiday season. And is this that sort of in-between period where Christmas to, I would say, the 1st or 2nd of January is one of the biggest where-am-I-what-is-going-on days, periods of the entire year, and you're sort of in the middle of it now as everybody sort of is back in at work, trying to get back into the flow of things, but also you have the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day coming up in the next 2 days. So it's a strange period of the year, but nonetheless, we're having a good time here. Christian Katt is our producer today, on the air today. How you doing, my friend? How was your holiday season? Give me a rundown. What's going on?
Everything's great. If I were to guess, a solid 75% of our FM dial listening audience who's driving around right now are probably either on their way to or on their way from returns they made of gifts they didn't like. That's what I would guess right now our demo is. That's who we're talking to locally here. That's what I would say.
Did you give back any gifts that you got that you did not like?
No. Heavy on the gift cards, so not too necessary to do that. I got a new cologne. I've never spent a lot of money on cologne in my life ever, but my girlfriend's family got me this cologne called Bad Boy, which apparently is like...
What's the brand? What's the brand?
It's a spinoff of...
It's a spinoff of what?
Of the female perfume called Good Girl. Let me see the brand itself. I never actually looked it up. Apparently, it's very, very good and exclusive. And
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know cologne brands, but I mean, I've never even heard of that. I didn't realize they had spinoffs. You know, the male and female side of the similar cologne. But if your girlfriend's extended family likes it, go ahead.
Carolina Herrera.
Never heard of it in my entire life. As long as your girlfriend likes it, I figure that's what matters, right?
Yeah, she's got the matching one. We opened up our presents simultaneously, so now I am cologne guy. I got to be. I got to get the word from the people around the office if I'm making...
And you also work at a box. You work in a production studio, which is, you know, 8x9. And if you're sitting there with 3 sprays of cologne, it's going to be, you know, it's a gas chamber of just scented smell. It's
exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah, so I went, after I got out of the shower this morning, dried off, shaved, so my whole body was nice and dry. That's when I applied the cologne. I went one pump, a prolonged pump, where I rubbed... Not rubbed. I glided along my forearm and then rubbed it on the forearms and then did neck. Just one pump. That's all I did on the cologne. I think that is the correct way to do it. Why would they recommend less than one pump? I feel like a pump is a good unit to measure cologne. So I'm a bad boy up today. That's what you can call me.
All right. So you got to, I would do the due diligence of gauging people in the office and making sure that you're not going to be that guy. Don't be that guy. You know, you could see the scent. You could see the smell. We smell you before we see you. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, didn't we have a coworker that smelled like that maybe a couple weeks ago? Andrew Crosby. Didn't he put too much Axe body spray?
He sure did. And it was a lot. And it was the type of thing that makes your eyes water. So, I mean, that happens. I get it. You know, I've never been cologne guy myself, but I'm glad you had a good time, and I'm glad you're not going to return that. I only had to return one thing. I did it today. My little brother got me a pair of running shorts, which I, you know, good brand. I liked it. It was an Adidas pair. But the problem is, it was an extra, extra large. And I opened it. I'm like, did you even look at this? Like, we're similar sizes. Did you even look at the pair of shorts and that they are, it's like the Indiana Hoosiers rip away pants and warm-ups. And I'm like, this is a sail. This is a sailboat, right? Like, this is huge. I mean, this is not going to work. So I had to go back and I had to fix it, but we're all set there. Yeah. That was the only thing I had to return. Outside of that, I think everybody else pretty much nailed it. I had a bad Christmas. I did some incorrect scouting, and I had two gifts, two family members, that I got them something in which they already got it in a different gift. My little brother, I got him a trivia game with film, and he's a big movie guy. So I thought he could play with his college buddies and everything like that. And I got him one, and two gifts before, my sister got him something similar. So I look at her, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, well, I'm pretty sure I told you that I was getting this. So I got burned there because I was the second one to be opened. And then I also got my brother headphones, wired headphones, which he wanted. And my mother, for some strange reason, decided to get us all wired headphones in our stocking. I'm like sitting there, Mom, first of all, I don't need this. Second of all, why it's just strange, these, you know, $12 pair of wired earbuds. I don't know why we need to have this in our stocking, nonetheless.
Well, so it's like, you see, like, buying that whole, like, Caleb Williams thing where he does not wear the wireless headphones, so they don't want the waves transmitted between their brain and ears. Like, it's a trend nowadays.
Caleb Williams spearhead that?
I don't know if he spearheaded that, but he jumped on the train, and he might be the most famous non-political person to co-sign that.
Yeah, I see the vision. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if earbuds did you wrong, but I did not know that was Caleb Williams who started that, but I think that is part of the reason why my brother wanted that. So here you go. So he got those, and I got burned twice, and I was read the Riot Act on Christmas morning, saying, you know, by my dad, saying, you didn't even bother, did you? And I'm like, all right, take it easy. Right?
You went to the calendar counter at the mall, you know, in the middle of the mall. You went to there, I guess.
Right, I got my parents' books, and they were not impressed with my book selections because I got it the day before. So I screwed up. I did not have a good Christmas giving holiday period. But it happens. What are you going to do?
You got burned. When you are someone like me many times, the person that has to buy when they travel to where they're spending the holidays, it's a big risk reward. And you suffer the consequences of having to buy day before day of gifts.
And that's what happens. So I had to do that, and I'm going to continue doing that. And I'm just going to make better decisions next year. That's all I got. That's all you can do. It's all you can do. You can't nail it. But nonetheless, I'm glad you had a good holiday season. And we had a good weekend, good week, really, of football. Surprisingly enough, the Christmas Day games, you know, not bad. Not bad at all. You know, you thought it was going to be terrible with Chris Oladukun, Max Brosmer, and Josh Johnson leading the way. But the underdogs really stepped up to play. And, it wasn't terrible. And I was expecting it to be terrible. And then you get into the weekend's end of football where the Buffalo Bills and then the Eagles, which I actually thought the Eagles wouldn't even show up and play. Because I did this all yesterday with Kate Chumson on Sunday Huddle. Going into the week, there were a number of teams that didn't have a ton to play for. I included the Eagles in that category because the Eagles are not going to be the four seed. They're going to they're set in their division, and they need to go 2-0, and the Bears need to go 0-2 in order for the Eagles to get to the two seed. And were they going to play that hard to make sure they get that spot? I don't know if it was that important to them. Now, as it turns out, it was quite important to them. And on the other end of things, the Bills didn't want to stay in that five seed, because if the Bills won, they probably would have taken on the winner of Steelers-Ravens, which is next Sunday night. And now they're going to go to Jacksonville. And that will likely, unless the Dolphins beat the Patriots, that will likely be the 6-3 game in the AFC. And it's all because the Bills did not show up offensively until the fourth quarter. And defensively, they had a great second half, not a good first half. And then down 7 points, 13-6, going right down the field with about a minute to go, they're able to score. And in a half, it's the second of which this has happened, by the way. The 1987 Patriots were the second team, were the first team in NFL history to win multiple games in a season without completing a pass in the second half. Now the Eagles have done that. So the Eagles have done this twice, where they have not completed the pass in the second half of a football game and have won the game. And that was what happened yesterday in Orchard Park at Buffalo. And the Bills still were not able to win. It's a classic game in which the Eagles were able to kind of steal it. And the Bills, on the other hand, the big takeaway of that game was they scored. And they had a chance to tie the game, play into OT. The Eagles had 17 yards of offense in the second half. They have been terrible. The Bills' defense was shutting them down left and right. And the Bills decide to go for it, go for two, and admittedly, get a good playoff. Josh Allen misses the throw, and the Bills lose. Christian, did you think that the Bills at the end of that Bill Eagle game in Buffalo, you think them going for two was, number one, the right decision? And how horrific to you is it in your eyes that the Eagles were able to win a game like that playing the way they did?
Yeah, petrifying and really sad to see Nick Sirianni take a victory dance through the exit visiting team tunnel after a performance like that, because he earned the right to win in that game. It was the wrong decision made. 90% of the time, I am on team. Take the control of the game. Put it in your offense's hands, especially when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen. Go for two, win the game or lose the game right there. Except, and now there has to be an asterisk on my opinion in this situation, when you're holding the opposition to 17 yards of offense, 0 yards passing in the second half. Like, the Eagles couldn't do anything offensively the entire second half. Why wouldn't you want to take all that momentum and just play more football into overtime? I did not really understand that decision. And he knew that decision was being made from the jump. Remember, there was this weird runoff, timeouts. There was plenty of time to decide whether or not they wanted to go for two or if the Bills wanted to kick the extra point, which they missed on the previous touchdown. And no, they decided from the jump that it was go for two territory, which I disagree wholeheartedly with.
Yeah, we have a couple things on what you just said there. There was the big blunder because it was about 23 seconds to go, and we thought it was a touchdown by Dawson Knox, and it actually, the replay assist came in with 18 seconds to go. With Bills, Bills had a timeout, but they decided that he was actually short of the line of gain. He was going to be at that 1 yard line, and it was going to be fourth and goal. And with 18 seconds to go, with the Eagles having two timeouts and the Bills having one timeout, the refs went to Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills, and said, hey, do you want to call a timeout or take the 10-second runoff, and then the play goes live when the ball is spot? Sean McDermott did not end up taking the timeout so he could let the... It was fourth and goal anyway. You're running one play. There's a field goal's off the table. You're going to score a touchdown or you're going to lose. And he let the 10-second runoff happen, and then he happened to get down to about 4 or 5 seconds, and then he called the timeout, and that was it. Weirdly enough, Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady were on the call that game, and they had no idea what Sean McDermott was doing. I thought that was quite obvious, the fact that they didn't want to give the Eagles with two timeouts any chance to at least get a kickoff to win the game, especially with how these teams and how the kickoffs operate nowadays. All it takes is basically one or two plays. So I was surprised that Burkhardt and Brady were so confused about that, because they were. They were sitting there, well, hold on, why would he get the 10-second runoff? It took Dean Blandino coming in from Los Angeles to explain, Kevin, they want the 10-second runoff to eradicate any possibility of the Eagles getting a chance there. So that's number one. But number two, you're completely right. Jalen Hurts was 0-for-7 in the second half passing the football. 0-for-7. They were terrible offensively, drive after drive after drive. 3 plays -2 yards, 3 plays -4 yards, 3 plays -2 yards, 3 plays -0 yards, 5 plays -13 yards. Those are their second half drive, I guess, numbers. Can you believe that? That is punt, 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 punt. Five punts, and they had a grand total of 17 yards of offense. That is an inexcusable decision to go for two there when you have completely dominated the game and you're not in Lincoln Financial, you're not in Philly, you're in Buffalo. So I don't understand why you would turn it into a coin flip when if you push it to OT, you're at a 70-30. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
The Eagles have a much greater chance of stopping that 2-point conversion than putting any points on the scoreboard, let alone winning the game in overtime.
Period. That's what it turns into. You do the go for two when you need to flip the game to a 50-50 chance. And when you feel like you're stealing the game, you're on the road, you feel like you shouldn't be there, but you are there, that's when you go for two and steal the game. But when you're the kind of the team that has dominated the last 30 minutes of play, you extend the period in which you play. That's it. And they were killing them offensively, rushing the football. Josh Allen was finally getting going. And another thing to that is Allen just missed him. Khalil Shakir was open in the end zone. They could have completed that, and we wouldn't be talking about this. It was partially Josh Allen's fault for missing that ball. So there was a number of things the Bills did wrong. I think teams are so short-sighted with those decisions. It's always when you go, the analytics say go for it, utilize momentum. Half the time, they don't want these guys to get hurt, too. You know, we're in game 16. We're in week 17. We're in the postseason. Do we really want to play another quarter of football when we're all beat up and everybody's getting hurt? There have been so many injuries guys getting beat up. Trent Williams got hurt in the first play of the game yesterday in the San Francisco game. I understand the argument that we just want to protect our guys and get out of there. But when you're trying to win the game and trying to secure a good playoff positioning, you got to extend the period of play. I think the Bills made a really bad decision there. Now, on the top of this Bills thing, staying on this topic, watching both of those teams, and Christian, you have a team on the AFC side with the Ravens who now all of a sudden are in a good spot to be in the postseason and have a favorable matchup in the first round of the postseason. Leave it to the Ravens for that to happen to them. But nonetheless, Bills and or the Eagles, are you afraid of either of these two teams? Because I have two takeaways that I learned from that game specifically and Sunday Night Football, and I don't think I'm afraid of any of those four teams. But I'll stay on this Bill and the Eagle game. Are you afraid of what the Bills can do or the Eagles or what the Eagles can do at this point?
The Eagles are a great tackling team. That defense is ferocious.
Unbelievably good defense. There's no doubt about that.
But like, if you give the Eagles the football on their own 25-yard line and they need a touchdown with 2.5 minutes to go, I like my chances if I'm any of the contenders in the NFL right now. So on the offensive side of things, no, I'm not worried about the offense of the Eagles. And I'm also not necessarily, despite holding the Eagles so much in check, the defense of the Bills. If you combine the offense of the Bills and the defense of the Eagles, you have the best team in the NFL, in my opinion. But no, I'm not really afraid of the Bills. All right, so I'm a Ravens fan, so I'm not very confident in my team. So it's not that I'm not afraid of the Bills. If you are a contender in the NFC or the AFC, I would not be afraid of either of the teams, no.
Right. And 11-5 they're sitting at. They're going to have Jacksonville that first game. And I'm sitting here as a Jaguar fan who has watched the Bills a whole lot and who have watched every snap of the Jaguars. I think it's a favorable matchup in favor of Jacksonville. I really do. I think the Texans pose more of a problem. The only thing that you're worried about with Buffalo is they got Allen. That's the only thing you're worried about, truly. Well, they have James Cook and Josh Allen. That is about it for the entire team. So I don't really, this might be famous last words, and then all of a sudden James Cook goes for 212, and Josh Allen has 5 total touchdowns in the first round of the postseason. But this Bill team, they're sitting at 11-5. They're not that great. They're really not.
Yeah.
They don't freak me out, because I don't think their defense is any, they played great in the second half, but it was against a terrible offense. The Bill defense is not that great, and they have no wide receivers. They have no wide receivers. They're beat up. It's a James Cook and Josh Allen show. And that is it. And I don't know if that's good enough to win postseason games. And I know everybody's saying, oh, it's the Bills season or bust because of all the sort of pretenders that are sitting there in the AFC. And there might be some truth to that. And maybe I'm gonna have to swallow that pill when we get to it, when they go to Jacksonville that first round of the postseason. I don't think the Bills are that good. I really don't. And I thought that was a classic game of overmanaging from Sean McDermott yesterday, which we've seen quite a bit in his tenure as the head coach there. And I also think, Allen's been erratic. Allen's great. There's no doubt he's great. I'd take him on my team tomorrow. But he is erratic this season. And it's the same reason that, Mahomes was erratic this year. Burrow's been erratic this year. Lamar, when healthy, has been erratic this year. And maybe he hasn't even been healthy. These top-tier players have been up and down. Hurts, you could consider that. Hurts, how has he been? He has been erratic, nonetheless. So I think it's been a tale of what we saw in that Bill game. I think they screwed that up. But I also think coming out of that game, you're always afraid because the Eagles are postseason proven. I am not afraid of Buffalo. I am not afraid of Buffalo at all.
Yeah.
I don't even know who I am afraid of in that AFC, but Buffalo is not one of them.
I do got to say, I think the Fox game that we saw yesterday between the Eagles and the Bills should have been the Super Bowl last year. I honestly, if Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills were able to successfully complete the quarterback sneaks like they did against the toughest front four in the NFL yesterday against the Eagles, if they did that against the Chiefs last year, they are in the Super Bowl. But you're right with Josh Allen, extremely erratic. Yes, you talk about the misfire on the what would have been game-winning, ended up being game-losing two-point conversion. How about his sack that lost 19 yards to enter the fourth quarter? And they were blanked. It was 13-0, Eagles on top, Bills driving down the field in field goal range, as you allude to. They were on the 27-yard line. He just runs backwards 20 yards and takes points off the board for his team. That was pretty inexcusable. If they get points there, it changes the entire dynamic of the game. and not even the situation of which they ended up being at the end of the game there. So that was really bad by Josh Allen. He made a couple of those puzzling decisions of holding onto the football a little bit too long, which is kind of like the bad Josh Allen, the rookie year Josh Allen putting on the Superman cape when it might not necessarily be necessary. We saw that yesterday.
888-760-3776, the Baptist Health Hotline, I'm theoretically speaking, on ESPN 106.3. Are you afraid of either the Bills or the Eagles, or those two teams that have sort of on the tail end of their peaks and are just waiting to lose in the postseason? Are there bigger and better and scarier teams in the postseason picture than what we saw yesterday in that Fox game of the week in Eagles and the Bills? I'm not afraid, especially of the Bills. I think the Eagles are dangerous because that defense will keep them around whenever they need to. But point being, I don't think I'm afraid of either side. 888-760-3776. Do they pose a threat to you? Are they win-it-all good enough, Bills and or Eagles? Let us know, 888-760-3776. That is Christian Katt, Colin Russo filling in for Theo Dorsey. It has been Theoretically Speaking on ESPN on 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is Theoretically Speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
No Theo Dorsey, Colin Russo filling in today on Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3. The new year is in about 2 or 3 days away, and with that, we all know it, New Year's Resolution Series. What does that mean? Now it's time to put together, what's my New Year's resolution going to be? How am I going to improve myself? Is it going to be getting in shape? Is it going to be eating better? Is it going to be making sure I get 8 hours of sleep? Am I quitting something? What will it be? Well, you got to understand, if you're out thinking about the fitness side of it and you want to do a fitness type resolution, you got to understand that it's about nutrition. It's not about just showing up. It's about putting the right fuel into your body. That's where Vitacost Sports Certified Marketplace comes into play. It's built for athletes, fitness enthusiasts, people who understand the benefits of what clean supplementation and nutrition can do for your body. Whether you're prepping for a race, grinding at the gym, just trying to get into better shape, Vitacost is your go-to for taking your game to the next step. They have Sports Certified Marketplace that has over 400 performance-enhancing supplements that are all certified, which means that there's no funny business, they're all free of banned substances, and they help you level up your game. Visit vitacost.com/sport-certified to make your purchase today. Use code ESPN20 for 20% off. That's code ESPN20. Level up your game at Vitacost. Colin Russo in for Theo Dorsey. We still got Christian Katt here. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X at ESPN West Palm, ESPN South Florida app as well. We're going to have a couple guests on today. We got Mike Tannenbaum joining us a little later on in the program, about 20 minutes from now. We're going to hear from Evan Cohen in about an hour. We're also going to hear from Jonathan Zazzo further into Russo and Rizzo, which we have today, and the fifth quarter. So we got you up until 7 p.m. Right here on ESPN 106.3. But staying on what we saw yesterday in Week 17 of the NFL, we talked about that Bill game and how the Bills squandered that ending. Another game where I thought the team actually squandered the ending, but it was a very entertaining game. You know, everybody likes throwing around the game, the famous Ram-Chief game, Monday Night Football, Week 10 of, I want to say, 2018, where it was Patrick Mahomes versus the number one offense, Rams, with Jared Goff, Todd Gurley and company. And it was that great Monday Night Football game. They were both, I believe, 8-1, or 7-2, 8-1. And it was that classic back-and-forth affair, as good as it gets, Joe Tessitore on the call. Yeah, that famous game, everybody likes, that was one of the best regular season games I've ever seen in terms of entertainment aspect, in terms of offense. And I'm not saying the game we saw last night in Sunday Night Football was as close to that, but if there is a game that could be compared to that in terms of just offensive firepower, look no further than what you saw in that San Francisco-Chicago game on Sunday Night Football. And you can make the argument that, hey, two very, very vile defenses on either side, but another thing that is absolutely the case is you had two absolute top-of-their-craft geniuses as head coach on either side with Ben Johnson and Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan and Ben Johnson, it just goes to show it's the most valuable position in the entire NFL. It's not quarterback. It's who calls the plays for the quarterback. That is as important as it gets, and Shanahan and Johnson put on an absolute clinic of offensive play calling, and it was a joy to watch. Very fun game, 42-38 final score. Chicago had a chance from the 4-yard line at the end of the game with about 8 seconds to go. A couple things I thought they screwed up there. But walking away from that, Christian, that was where you walk away and think, this is what football is all about. Yeah. Because you go to the Eagles, who had 17 yards in five possessions against the Bills at 425, and you're dry heaving offensively. And then you go to this where you're thinking, boy, do these defenses even know how to play football? And you got Chicago and San Francisco scoring back and forth and back and forth. It was a surprise when a team got a stop. That's how crazy of an offensive game it was. But it goes to show that football is a tale of two coins. You saw one coin with the Bill game, and you saw another point with that Chicago-San Francisco game, which is as good of an offensive fun game as I've seen since that Monday Night Football game with the Rams and the Chiefs.
Yeah, I was rooting heavy for the Bears in that game for two reasons. One, my girlfriend lives in Chicago. She just picked her favorite NFL team starting this season and is the Bears. She's been a football fan for nearly a decade now, but didn't have her favorite team until this year, so I was rooting for her, and we had skin in the game where you guys on the Cover 5 contest, where it is Theoretically Speaking versus Russo and Rizzo, you guys picked the Niners, so it helps us if the Bears not only cover, but cover by a lot of points. They went into Sunday Night Football as three-point dogs. I gotta say, empathizing with those Bears fans out there, the last time they were relevant, their season came to a close against the previous segment's focal point in the Philadelphia Eagles with the double doink at home. We knew who that went. And the Bears were led by their quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. And that defense was awesome for the Bears in that year. In 2017, if I recall correctly.
2018, yes.
2018. The offense was not nearly as simply fun to watch. Despite winning a lot of games, winning double-digit games, playing in important games, that Bears team was not nearly as fun to watch as this year's Bears team, who are now relevant once again, division champions once again, and their offense is just explosive. They have the home run ball whenever they want it, with Caleb Williams at the helm, throwing it to whether it's Zacchaeus, DJ Moore, or even dumping it off to Swift, who can break tackles, and McGonagall, who's been fun to watch this season. That Bears team, in a loss, still impressed me. It was awesome.
And walking away from that, you thought, boys, Caleb Williams, does he have all the pieces? Collinsworth said it a number of times. Caleb Williams has a couple plays here and there where he sails it, he doesn't see something, and they call it out, and they're like, hey, this is, you know, with this misfire you can't have. It happened about three times in the game, and especially on a third and long there in the second half, where he had an easy dump off, but he just sails it because he's just got so much arm power. But throughout the game, he made probably six or seven wow throws. He had 330 yards, two touchdowns, and the game he put on offensively looked a lot better than that, too. It looked like a 400-yard game with four touchdowns. He was so impressive throwing the football. He's got such an impressive arm. He's fast. He's great outside the pocket. He's great throwing to his left. There were a number of throws you're thinking, boy, oh, boy, there were under five players who can make that throw. And on the other side, I know some people aren't a fan of him. I think Christian's one of them. I'm a Brock Purdy guy. 300 yards, three touchdowns, an interception. After coming at Monday Night Football last week, where he had a pick six the first play of the game. And outside of that, he put together pretty much an excellent game. That was a quarterback offensive play calling display. And that was a game I walked away. I'm like, we love talking about it. San Francisco can just rinse and repeat their quarterbacks. You don't need to put a ton of money towards them. You could just do the Garoppolo, find somebody, Mac Joneses of the world, and just kind of figure it out because they have such a good play caller. But yesterday was an example of where if you didn't have Brock Purdy, you were probably going to lose that game. And Brock Purdy had five touchdowns. He had two on the ground. He had a couple just unreal, amazing throws under pressure, including one to the Tongas on the left corner of the end zone. He was awesome. And I'm a Purdy guy. I'm glad they paid him because he was making, you know, $600,000 for 4 years after going to a Super Bowl. So I'm glad he's actually paid. And I think Purdy, at his best, is really, really rock solid. He is, at his best, a top seven or eight at the position in the sport. I think he is that good. And he's postseason proven because when they took on the Chiefs in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, he played well in the game. He played very well in the game. And he played good enough to win. So I know Purdy's good in a big spot. That's the big question with a lot of these guys. And now the question is Caleb Williams going to be good in a big spot? Now, Christian, another thing I had a problem with this game was the Bears had 75 seconds left on the clock. They had three timeouts, and they were at the 49ers' 40-yard line. they ran out of time in the game. It was not fourth down. It was not, you know, third and short. It was first down and goal. And they were running out of time in the game. I thought that was a first-year head coach major issue. And the play that comes to mind is that hook and ladder, which you want to run away with. Oh, what a play call. Please, they killed 30 seconds of play clock with no timeouts on that hook and ladder that got DeAndre Swift to the 3 or 4 yard line. And after that, it killed a play or two. So I actually thought the Bears screwed it up because you need to get at least 3 or 4 chances at the end zone. They did not do that. They did not do that. I thought Ben Johnson screwed that at the end of that game up. And I thought that was the reason they lost. If they had 2 or 3 chances at the end zone, chances are they score. But there were a number of opportunities, especially on those last 2 drives, the one where they got the field goal and the one where they missed out in that last play of the game, where I thought if you played your cards right, you could have actually had more chances to win the game. But you wanted to run a hook and ladder in between the sideline markers and not stop the clock with no timeouts to go. And all of a sudden, you got 5 seconds to go on a spike. I thought that was a big mishap. And big part of the reason why the Bears did not get multiple opportunities at the end zone. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there was one of two hook and ladders that we saw this weekend. The Bills ran one of those too.
The Jaguars ran one and also had a fumble because of it. But yes, the Bills did run one as well. Bills ran one on a crucial third and long or fourth and long because they ran it twice this year. And that was an unbelievable play. But it was, you know, they had time in the game. But continue.
No, I was in the air during this second half of Sunday Night Football, and I was sitting in the airport watching the entirety of the first half. We literally boarded while it was during the halftime break, and I thought, boy, as someone who was rooting for the Bears in this game, the Bears were just hanging in there, and I thought the 49ers were going to run away with it. I thought they were going to win this game.
Yeah, they were playing better than the game. You could sense that. They were playing better than
the game. You think about the 7 bonus points just gifted to them on the first play of the game with the pick 6, and I was shocked to see that this went down to the final play, and I went back and watched it, and you're exactly right with the time issues and the game management issues from that Bears sideline. You almost, for a split second, if you didn't look at the record and the fact that the division was clinched, you kind of looked like their previous head coach who had big issues with the clock, Matt Eberflus, in how the Bears mismanaged the end of that game, which is kind of scary to think that you're going to be in those situations in the playoffs when the margins are so much more thin to where you need every second you can get, because you're probably going to come from behind in 1 or 2 of these playoff games if you make it that far. So that's very concerning if you're a Bears fan.
They called their first timeout with 40 seconds to go at the San Francisco 31. You knew for a fact, because these teams have mastered the 2-minute drill, you knew for a fact that Chicago was going to hustle down the field and get into the red zone. It's a matter of if you get a red zone stop. That was what the end of that game looked like. 2 minutes, 15 seconds to go. The 49ers scored a touchdown. They're up 4. So you're not holding them past the field goal. You need to get a touchdown to win the game. You knew that it was going to be a red zone stop. But I actually thought it was a clock mismanagement, like you said, that really killed the game. Whether you want to save maybe 30 seconds previously if you call a timeout earlier, but they called the three timeouts in a span of 14 seconds. 40 seconds, 33 seconds, and 26 seconds. That was when they called their 3 timeouts in that game. And that's where I thought you really screwed up. Because you got rid of your clock-stopping maneuvers, and then all of a sudden, with 26 seconds to go, you get an incompletion at 2nd and 10, and then you're on a hook and ladder with 21 seconds to go that doesn't even get into the end zone. So we're all sitting there, oh, you got to spike the ball. You just killed 2 plays. Instead of you just went towards the end zone or toward the sideline, you would have had 18 seconds to go at the 5-yard line. And maybe you could blame DeAndre Swift. You watch the play back. It actually looks like Swift. If he cut outside, he probably could have made it out of bounds. But that is the type of thing where it's about the amount of times that you get a chance at the end zone. So that was a first-year coaching blunder, if I've ever seen one. And whether you want to call, oh, cool play, fun play, that's the thing. You can't be style over substance. That's what that felt like to me. So I actually thought the Bears screwed that up. I really did. Because all of a sudden, you had that final play, the hook and ladder with Colson Loveland and DeAndre Swift. Then the next play, there's 5 seconds to go in the game. You got 1 chance at the end zone. That's a no-go. You cannot do that. Not with 2 minutes, 15 seconds at the 35-yard line. It's too easy to get in the red zone. You're at the 31-yard line with 45 seconds to go and 3 timeouts. And you get 1 chance at the end zone. Terrible job. Terrible job by the Bears. Very preventable, in my opinion. Now, to build on this. Christian, I think that both of these offenses, especially San Francisco, San Francisco is bad. The fact that San Francisco is even in the marking, in the fighter's chance for the number one seed in the NFC, and for a bye, after losing Fred Warner basically 2 months ago, after losing Nick Bosa, injuries galore, Ricky Pearsall missed 7 games, Brock Purdy missed 6 games, George Kittle hasn't played, Trent Williams got hurt in the first play of the game, he's probably the most important player on that team. It's incredible that Shanahan has the postseason sort of blemishes on his resume, because he is an unbelievable football coach, and that is a Super Bowl caliber offense. And it's just Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, and Ricky Pearsall. That's how impressive that offense is. 49ers can win it all. They could win it all.
Yeah, they're the most forgotten about team in the NFL in terms of teams that definitely have a fair chance and a proven track record of being able to win that conference. And when I say most forgotten, I'm probably just telling on myself, forgotten by me. Because when I think NFC contenders to actually hoist Lombardi, I still would probably, even against everything they've shown me on tape, I still would probably think about the Eagles before I would think of the 49ers, just because of recency bias and going to have a home game to start the playoffs. But the 49ers, the past 2 weeks in primetime, have reintroduced themselves to the country as we pretty much have a lot of the same pieces that got us to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
And they're not even healthy. They're not even healthy. And there's a chance they get Fred Warner back. If they get that first overall seed, and they haven't played the Seattle Seahawks since the first game of the year in which they beat them, but if they're able to beat Seattle this weekend on that Saturday night game to get the number one seed in the NFC, they get a bye, they get to win one game, and then boom, Fred Warner's back. Oh my gosh, we got to win one game, and we play the team with the lowest seed remaining? We play one game, and then all of a sudden, Fred Warner, they were talking about it yesterday, apparently he's accelerated in his ankle rehab, and he is a top four most important defensive player in the entire league. That would be huge for them. That team is dangerous. Now, you don't trust Shanahan with a lead. You don't trust him to get you to the promised land if you got a 21-point lead in the third quarter. But if you need to go blow for blow, Kyle Shanahan's as good as anybody. As good as anybody. That team can win it all. Chicago, I'm still up and down in Chicago. I don't really know.
Really?
Defensively, they've had a lot of injuries. Caleb Williams is great. Offensively, they're great. They just rely on a lot of youth. That was Luther Burden, rookie. Colson Loveland, rookie. Caleb Williams, who was never going to start a playoff game going into that game. Kyle Manungai, who was a rookie. They got a good offensive line. It's a team that has had a lot of injuries, and you're relying a lot on youth. I don't know if I trust that, and I don't know if I trust a first-year head coach on top of that to kind of rally them all together, especially after giving up a touchdown basically every single drive against the 49ers.
Defense is worrying me because once they weren't getting the turnovers, that was really it. And that's kind of the story of the Bears defense.
That's going to run out, you know? Yeah. It's going to tighten up.
My question for you is, are you more confident in a team that doesn't blow many teams out, but they win the close games against a lot of good teams, or a team that blows a lot of people out, but their losses always come by a one-possession game where they could have won if X, Y, and Z were executed better?
So, this is an example you're talking about, like the Denver Broncos, for example, who is a team that has sort of escaped a lot of the games that they have played versus, somebody like where they lose close. It would be a little bit like Chicago, where every kind of close game they've played in, it's been, you know.
Well, no, I was thinking the opposite. I felt like the Bears have played a lot of games. Like, it asked this question before last night, and they're winning all these close games where they feel like they're pulling rabbits out of hats, and they feel like one perfect thing has to go right, where you almost think of the Kirk Cousins Vikings, where they were winning these one-score games at a historic rate. But once the rooster came to crow, and it was the playoffs, they lost to Daniel Jones and the Giants.
I guess what I was trying to say is the Bears and the Broncos are sort of in the same boat in terms of that. That traditionally, that runs out. Traditionally, that sort of runs its course.
You think about just margin. What is it? The teams that make the Super Bowl are oftentimes have the best margin of victory.
Yeah, they're more dominant. More dominant, and that's part of the reason why the Eagles were so good. And you know, the Chiefs got away with it last year. Remember, the Chiefs won 15 games. They won every single one by basically one score. But that's the Chiefs. For a first year, sort of into the dance type of team, that type of thing sort of runs its course for me. I agree. But all of a sudden, if you eliminate the teams that are good in one-score games, you're not going to have many teams left. So, like, the Bears would be eliminated in that regard. You know, the Broncos would be eliminated in that regard. Teams that have been dominating, then you got to bring up the schedules. You know, 49ers have had an easy schedule. The Patriots have had an easy schedule. So that's where you start to look back and forth. At, all right, well, every team's got a blemish somewhere. Well-rounded, it's going to be hard to put that together. But we'll talk to the expert on the other side of things because we got Mike Tannenbaum, the ESPN NFL insider, former general manager of the Jets. Got a couple things to talk about it with him. Number one, we had the tank poll yesterday with the Raiders and the Giants. Basically, for rights at the number one pick in the draft, I'm curious on the front office perspective in a game like that and if they have a viewpoint, if they have a rooting interest in a spot like that. And we'll also get his thoughts on all things football because we got a big week up ahead that we got to talk about with him and get a couple reactions. Looking forward to that. That's Mike Tannenbaum on the other side of things. Colin Russo, Christian Catt, theoretically speaking, on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
No, Theo Dorsey, Colin Russo filling in on Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3. It is Monday, December 29th, 2025, soon to be 26, with the new year coming up in just a few short days. Hope everybody had a wonderful holiday. We are streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter / X on all those great places. That's ESPN West Palm, ESPN South Florida. We'd like to welcome in on Theoretically Speaking. He is a former general manager for the New York Jets. He's the former executive vice president of football operations for the Miami Dolphins. He's current ESPN NFL insider. It is Mr. Mike Tannenbaum joining us now. Mike T, how are we doing today? What's going on?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Mike T. Good week of football. A lot of stuff to look forward to. Got a couple things I want to get sort of your kind of take on. Number one, what we saw last night on Sunday Night Football, in my opinion, is just a masterclass of offensive play calling with Kyle Shanahan and Ben Johnson sort of going blow for blow. I mean, you can make an argument that both defenses not that good and definitely depleted on the injury side, but it was just offensive play calling galore. And I'm curious on your perspective on this because I think the tone on this type of coach has changed in the last 5 or 6 years, but the offensive play calling head coach has been sort of the premium for new coaches. There's been a couple that have flamed out, but generally people are looking for a Ben Johnson, they're looking for a Liam Cohen, they're looking for a Kyle Shanahan, they're looking for a Sean McVay, and it seems to be the new hot topic amongst these coaches. Now, I want to talk to you, somebody who's been in these front offices. Is that the most valuable position in terms of nailing that? If you can nail your play caller, you'll almost be in a good spot here. Where are you with that, with the offensive play calling, not only head coach, but the offensive play caller period and its value to an organization?
Yeah, Colin, I know, you know, a lot of people feel like that's a big trend, but to me, it's much more about like the leadership of the head coach. And you could look at Mike Vrabel, Mike McDonald in Seattle, New England, where they're going to have both have great seasons, both from the defensive side of the ball. And I think when you think about effective head coaching, it starts with that. You know, Andy Reid obviously was a great play caller for years, but he was a great CEO. Dan Campbell, Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells, some of the great coaches weren't necessarily great play callers, but they had the ability to manage them. And I think that's really the most important attribute of being a head coach.
So when you're interviewing head coaches from a front office perspective, and you got a guy who's a play caller coming in. So let's say Ben Johnson walks through the door, Liam Cohen walks through the door. Some of these guys, now Sean McVay didn't have a lot of experience and people are questioning that. You know, Liam Cohen didn't have a lot of experience at all when he walked into the Jacksonville and people questioned that. So from a front office perspective, when you're interviewing guys like this and you're trying to find that next Ben Johnson and to avoid the next Brian Daboll, for example, what sort of things are you looking for when talking to them that kind of give you a key into, all right, this guy sort of has that cut of the cloth. It's in his DNA to be a head coach.
Yeah, I always think it comes back to mindset. You know, show me a good listener. Show me somebody that can delegate. Show me somebody that can handle making people accountable are really where it starts. And some people can do that, Colin, and some can't. You have to be a leader. You have to be able to listen to others, hire people, and scale leadership because these jobs are too hard, too complicated, too complex to try to do it all by yourself.
And do you think it's almost better when general managers and coaches are hired together? Or do you think it's better when one's hired before the next? Or if a coach is still there but the general manager is leaving, maybe the Miami Dolphins do that. Do you think it's better in this day and age for it to be sort of lockstep together, guys attached at the hip? How do you view sort of the dynamic between hiring general managers versus hiring coaches and when to sort of one or the other?
Yeah, you know, I could go both ways. You know, at the Jets, I hired Rex Ryan. That one's great for a number of years. Obviously, we didn't end at the same time. I think it's always about getting the right people. So I think good organizations realize, like, hey, if we make a mistake, we're going to have to pivot and, you know, pivot quickly. So I think it's about, like, self-evaluation and making sure that, hey, do we have the right people going in the right direction? Is there good respect, collaboration? Can people bring different ideas to the table and feel comfortable doing so? You don't want just one personality, like, dominating the organization.
Mike Tannenbaum joining us on Theoretically Speaking right now on ESPN 106.3. Mike, we had an interesting game. It was one of the two games in the 4 o'clock slate. Some could call it the Tank Bowl. Tanking's a word that's really only thrown around by the fans and not necessarily the teams. But I think it goes into, I just wanted to get a perspective from somebody who's been in buildings like this. I got to imagine, I'm shooting from the hip, that there is a disconnect between how the front office views a game like the Giants and the Raiders yesterday versus how the coaches and the players view it. Is there any truth to that, to the sense that in the back of your mind, if you're the general manager of the Giants and you know you're going to be there, or spy tech for the Raiders and you know you're going to be there, are you thinking, boy, wouldn't it be nice to lose this game so we get the number one pick in the draft? I know the coaches and the players don't think like that, but I'm curious, going into a game like that, would a general manager think like this?
Yeah, look, I wish more fans and media could see the inside of an NFL locker room after a game. You know, medical experts have always given the equivalent of every NFL player is functionally in a car crash every week. That's what they put their bodies through. So anytime you're putting your body through that, you know, in a voluntary way, you want to win. And look, there is a disconnect. Certainly owners, you know, would never say it publicly, but of course, if you're in the Raiders, you want to lose yesterday, you want to be able to get Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore after the season you've had. And whether or not you win 2, 3, or 4 games, that really doesn't matter at the end of the day over the next 5 years. So there is a little bit of a disconnect, but without question, the players and the coaches, Colin, want to win every game that they play.
And do you think that the Giants lost a bit in winning that game yesterday against the Raiders, because now all of a sudden they don't control that number one overall pick? They have a quarterback. I know you said last week with Theo Dorsey that you actually think if the Giants were to get the number one overall pick, and they still can, were to get the number one overall pick, that would be something that they would be interested, or they should be interested in, is, hey, Jackson Dart, despite being year one first round rookie quarterback, you should absolutely do your due diligence and maybe perhaps even draft a first round quarterback like Fernando Mendoza. Do you think the Giants are still in a position like that, or do you think things change after winning that game against the Raiders?
You have to look at everything every year. And look, a decade ago, Kansas City Chiefs made the playoffs. They had Alex Smith. And what did they do? They trade up the next year for Patrick Mahomes, and we all know how that worked out. So even if you have Jackson Dart, you got to do your homework on any and all possibilities. I'll throw another name out there who's played incredibly well the last couple of weeks, Malik Willis. And there's going to be a number of teams that are going to try to sign Malik Willis. So if I'm the Giants, I'm encouraged by Jackson Dart, but by no means am I eliminating other ways to possibly, you know, improve that position.
And speaking of Malik Willis, that has sort of been sort of the stereotype and mold that has kind of functionally worked with Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. Hey, these guys, you know, sort of flamed out in their first spot. They have plenty of experience. They're older. They're sort of been hardened by their experiences as backups, or, you know, didn't work out as a starter, whatever it might have been. And now Malik Willis is sort of going to be that new hot topic coming into the offseason. When you're a general manager making a decision like that, how do you sort of differentiate, and how do you differentiate it from you yourself, from Malik Willis and Matt LaFleur's offense? Is it a perfect kind of marriage, or do we trust the player at this point? When do you start to make those distinctions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you got to give Malik Willis the benefit of the doubt, Colin. He's played really good football. If we were running a team and we need a quarterback and we're looking at Dante Moore, Fernando Mendoza, you got to look at Malik Willis as well and say, you know, like, he's played really well. Like, and keep in mind, you know, these last couple games, at one point, Next Gen Stats had the Green Bay Packers at a 99.5% chance of beating the Bears. The Bears needed a touchdown, a field goal, and an onside kick within 2 minutes. So they would have won that game, and I think the world would have probably viewed Malik Willis differently. I'm very high on him.
And is it concerning in your eyes that Malik Willis is, in a lot of ways, he has played better than Jordan Love in the short spurts that he has had. He even played well last year when it came in post-Jordan Love's knee injury that he suffered against the Eagles in that first game of the year in Sao Paulo. He's played well, if not in some instances better than Jordan Love. Should the Packers view that as almost a luxury of riches or a little concerning?
Riches, because there's probably about 28 or 29 teams that would love to have Jordan Love. So the fact that they have two really good quarterbacks is a great situation for them to be in.
And speaking of some of the games that we saw yesterday, we saw a lot of these teams in big spots, as in the Eagles and the Bills in that 13-12 game right there. We saw the Bears and the Niners. And I wanted to get sort of, I guess a week to go, where your favorites are in each conference. Let's start with the AFC, because I think that's the most wide open conference. That conference has been in a long, long time. Because I sit here and watch the Bills. We know we like Allen. We know we trust the coach. We know we like what's going on there. They have clear problems defensively and with the receiver room. So, and on top of that, you have the Patriots, who have only beaten one team with a winning record at this point in the season, and it's been the Bills. And they only have the Broncos, who are in a tight one every single time they play. Who is your favorite in the AFC with, I guess, 1 week left to play?
Yeah, I'll go with Buffalo just because of Josh Allen. They're going to have to go on the road, obviously, but you know, I think this is a team that will be a road favorite. Over the last month, their defense has played better, especially against the run, and if they could get Dalton Kincaid back, given how good they are in the running game, I think you're right, it's wide open, but I'll take Buffalo.
Mike, there was a weird report released at the end of last week out of the Baltimore camp where apparently Lamar Jackson, from insiders, are saying that the way he gets treated by the Ravens is different than every other player in that building, and a lot of questions about his maturity. That report, along with Tyler Huntley leading the Ravens past the Packers on Saturday, have a lot of people talking about the future of Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Do you expect anything unforeseen regarding a two-time MVP with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore? And how do you digest that situation?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, you got to keep him. He's, as you mentioned, multiple-time MVP. He's 29. And if you're lucky to have him, guys, you figure out a way to keep him. So a lot of teams would want to have Lamar Jackson, and I'd be shocked if he wasn't there.
And do you think that both the Ravens and the Steelers have put themselves in positions in terms of how the head coaches have performed where the fans can't necessarily ask questions about the stability of those positions and John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin?
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I know sometimes fan bases get restless, guys, but these are two all-time great coaches. They've been there a long time, deservedly so. And if either one of them was let go, there would be a line around the corner to hire either of them.
And I'm curious on this perspective. You talked about what you're going to do with Lamar. Lamar's multi-time MVP. Do you think it's crazy? I know he's had a good year, but with the Lions and Jared Goff, do you think they could take a page out of what the Rams did with the Lions and Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff? Do you think there's a possibility, an avenue in which the Lions should just pick up the phone and see if, you know, Dak Prescott could become available or Joe Burrow could become available? And they have Jared Goff sitting there. He's a good player. He's a very good player. But you don't know if he's a ceilinged player or not, and you can make the argument that he has because he hasn't been good in a big game recently. Is there something that they should maybe, with that good of a roster, take that into consideration, or is this Jared Goff or die?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jared Goff. You know, I think it's been their defense that's, you know, been problematic. That nucleus to me is a championship nucleus, and I'd be hard-pressed to break it up.
And, Mike, last thing here. Do you think the Ravens or the Steelers? I'll get both games. Carolina and Tampa and the Ravens and the Steelers are the two lone win and in games in Week 18. Where do you sit with either side?
Yeah, I like the Ravens because of Derrick Henry and no DK Metcalf, even though that game is in Pittsburgh. And I like Tampa Bay because they're at home. I think Carolina struggles to score on the road.
Fair enough. Mike, we appreciate it as always. Thank you for giving us the time, giving us a little bit of a background. Looking forward to talking again soon, and enjoy the new year, all right?
Thanks so much. You too, guys.
That's Mike Tannenbaum, the ESPN NFL insider, former general manager of the New York Jets, and former executive vice president of football operations for the Miami Dolphins. Appreciate his time as always as we enter into the second hour of Theoretically Speaking. Coming back after this, it's Colin Russo and Christian Catt on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. This is ESPN 106.3.